to the political cesspool known worldwide as the South's foremost populist radio program. And here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
All right, everybody. Third and final hour here at the Political Cesspool radio program. I'm your host, James Edwards. It's Saturday evening, August 21st, as I broadcast to you live from AM 1380 WLRM Radio in Memphis, Tennessee, going out to the AM-FM affiliate stations of the Liberty News Radio Network and on the Internet as well, simulcasting tonight, thepoliticalcesspool.org, our official Internet headquarters. I encourage everyone tuned in tonight to go and visit us there. Going to do something fun and a little different this third hour. We actually attempted to do this, three or four weeks ago. It was before the Hutton Gibson interview and all the media attention that spawned. But back at the end of July, I had the enjoyable opportunity to have the table turned on me. Rather than asking the questions, I was answering them during a robust interview with Richard Spencer and Alternative Right Radio. The result was a very high-energy conversation that we are about to play for you. That's right. Here, during this third hour, we are going to go to the audio from Richard Spencer's interview with me for Alternative Right Radio. Now, during the talk, we discussed a number of contemporary political issues, as well as the success of my new book, Racism, Schmacism. And we hope you enjoy it. Like I said, we tried it a couple of weeks ago. We got through a couple of segments, and then the audio kind of messed up on us. But it's something that I think you'll enjoy. And, well, here it is now. Without any further commentary from me, let's hit the tape.
So good to have with me James Edwards. James is the host of the radio, the Political Cesspool radio program, which you can catch every Saturday night. And he is also the author of a new book, Racism, Smacism, How Liberals Use the R Word to Push the Obama Agenda. So thanks for bringing on the program, James.
Richard, it's definitely my honor and privilege to be on your podcast today. I am a very big fan of your work on Alternative Right, and it's good to share quality company.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, well, James has been nice enough to have me on the cesspool a couple of times, and I've always enjoyed the conversations we've had on there. So I wanted to have him on my show as well. Well, James, I've noticed that over the past week, you and your radio program have become a kind of hate object for the media, politicians, and many others. So why don't you just, before we talk, I'd love to talk about your book and some other bigger topics, but let's just start out with this one. Just tell us what is going on, what you are appearing in, you know, the Huffington Post and all these other there's places as, you know, the embodiment of evil. So so give us all of the details of what's happened.
Well, I'll tell you, back in 2006, the Southern Poverty Law Center proclaimed us to be the radio nexus of the American hate movement or something to that effect. And that was 4 years ago. And since then, we have been burning white hot, no pun intended. And this summer, though, has been particularly scorching with regard to the media attention that has been lavished upon us for a number of reasons. I mean, I think that we attract these sort of attacks because we're unequivocally pro-white. Mm-hmm. We stand up for our convictions without retreat, surrender, or apology, and that drives our detractors absolutely mad. And rather than respond to their attacks the way so many weak white men do by apologizing or acquiescing or falling on our sword in shame, we basically welcome the attacks and mock them for taking the time to disparage us as such. But this summer, though, Richard, you asked, gosh, it started out, as you mentioned, I released my book, which has been very favorably reviewed by you and many other prominent movement leaders, in June. And since then, it's just been one hit after another. We had an interview in early June on our radio program in which we introduced Tim Adams to the world. Uh-huh. What makes Tim Adams significant is the fact that he was a senior elections clerk in Honolulu, Hawaii during the 2008 presidential elections, and after all this time, he still had new information regarding the Obama birth certificate collapse, and as a result of his coming on our show, he got picked up by a number of so-called mainstream movement, mainstream media entities such as Wilmette Daily and Fox News, mm-hmm. and we were roundly criticized for that, or he was roundly criticized for having appeared on our show. I don't know if you know this or not, but Mel Gibson has been making the news this summer, yes. and we have a close relationship with his father, Hutton Gibson, who has spoken his mind about his opinion of World War II, and so we begin to press this summer for our relationship with the Gibson family. Then Keith Olbermann declared us to be the worst person in the world in one of his segments on his MSNBC program in June. And then, let's see, this week we had Sheriff Paul Bepue of Pinal County, Arizona, one of the leading forces down there in border control. Of course, you know, Arizona on the cutting edge of securing America's borders, reclaiming America's destiny. Paul Bepue has done a great job of doing that. Well, he came on our show, and some left-wing websites picked it up, and now it's all over CNN. John McCain and J.D. Hayworth are debating back and forth as to their relationship with this neo-Nazi show that is so famous and that has been so roundly denounced by the ADL. And I tell you, we're just, I'll let the Southern in me come out a little bit. We're kind of reveling in all this like a pig in slop.
Sure.
It doesn't bother us at all that we're attacked. We're proud that all of these people know our names, and we see that these baseless smears on our character are basically just an endorsement of the quality of our work.
Absolutely. If you weren't doing something that was touching a nerve and kind of, you know, lighting a fire, then they would not be talking about you. It is kind of interesting that you have, you know, because I was reading this morning, so J.D. Hayworth has basically said he's denounced the cesspool, and we thought he was, you know, Mr. Right Winger, or we'd at least think that these people believe in, you know, free speech and open debate and all that kind of stuff, but those were apparently misconceptions.
Yeah, Hayworth, you know, if you go to his website, it says the consistent conservative. Well, no conservatives that I associate with, Richard, refer to other conservatives who have worked hard, paid their dues, sacrificed themselves on behalf of a cause far greater. Mm-hmm. Those people don't call other folks who are working in that capacity neo-Nazis. I mean, that's the kind of Marxist construct that a Trotskyite would employ.
Yeah.
And so for J.D. Hayworth to dismiss us as such, now granted, I mean, he probably has never heard of our radio program, and he's only parroting what he hears from the ADL, but if you're using the ADL or the Southern Poverty Law Center as your reference, and that, I think, speaks to the heart of your conservatism. But it's a very big story. In fact, if I may be so bold as to suggest, I think that the political cesspool, or news of the political cesspool, is dominating Arizona politics this week, because, again, as I said, we had this very renowned sheriff on our program, mm-hmm. who just happened to appear in all of John McCain's campaign ads,
right.
television ads this year, and as a result, again, the media picked up on this. It's been in the Arizona Republic, the Arizona Daily Star, which are the, you know, big publications of Phoenix and Tucson, respectively. It's been on CNN this morning. I saw Hayworth on there denouncing us. So it's big news out there, and it's all for naught. I mean, this is just more underhanded liberal attack. Unwarranted, and if these people had any honor whatsoever, from the sheriff to McCain to Hayworth, they would say, listen, we've looked at that show's website, they seek to put America first just like we do, and you know what, we stand with them, they're doing a good job. But that's not what they said, and far too often, this is the problem with European American men now, Richard.
Yeah.
They fold up like a lawn chair the second some limp-wristed hack journalist applies a little pressure. That's something we've got to do better than that. I mean, I'm certainly glad our ancestors had a little more gall when they were protecting us from the Muslim invaders. Think of if we had people like J.D. Hayworth at the gates of Vienna. I dare to think of what would happen to our people over the course of the centuries.
No, it's a very good point. I've also noticed, and we can actually get into this when we talk about your book, that these conservatives seem to take a kind of more left-wing anti-racist stance than a lot of the liberals. It's kind of amazing. Take for instance you. I mean, you're not advocating, you know, killing anyone or like putting people into camps or something like this. I mean, you're basically saying, I support the West. I support my heritage. I support my people and my people.
All right, everybody,
heritage.
We're going to push pause right there. This radio interview is going to dominate the bulk of this third hour. That is just the first segment. Still much more to come with Richard Spencer's exclusive interview with me, James Edwards, as the political cesspool rolls on tonight.
Way, there's more political cesspool coming your way right after these messages.
When the truth is found to be.
Welcome back. To get on the political cesspool, call us on James's dime, toll free at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
All right, everybody, having a little fun this third hour listening to the interview that I conducted, or actually that was conducted with me. For once, I was answering the questions rather than asking them. Had a great sit-down with Richard Spencer for Alternative Right Radio. We're sharing that with you right now. And since we're listening to a tape this hour of that interview, it's giving me an opportunity to actually have a little free time while the show is progressing. And right now I'm on my email answering correspondence, answering emails, I guess, letters from listeners. Just like you. So, if you want to email me while we're listening to this interview with Richard Spencer, shoot one over to me, James Edwards@thepoliticalcesspool.org. I'm writing back to a couple of listeners right now, and there is no night like tonight to buy racism schmacism. You can do that as well. All that and more at thepoliticalcesspool.org. And that being said, let's go back to the interview that Richard Spencer did with me a few weeks back.
I support, you know, reclaiming America's destiny, all this kind of stuff. You're not advocating any, you know, disgusting or terrible thing like that. And yet J.D. Hayworth feels it's, you know, it's his need to kind of prove how, you know, non-racist he is. I mean, it's like these conservatives take to all this poison, you know, more than the liberals. I find it amazing.
Other than the ADL and the SLC, over the course of our broadcasting careers, which now spans better than a half decade, we have been attacked far many more times from the Republican establishment than the liberal establishment, if you can believe that. And you're right, it's their minds have been poisoned. I don't know why they feel compelled to try to curry favor with people who have never supported them to begin with. The people that McCain and Hayworth are pandering to this week, in light of the sheriff's interview on our radio program, have never supported them, will never support them.
No.
It's a fool's errand to try. And in doing so, I think it just shows weakness on their part and will attract more attacks, just like blood in the water will attract the sharks. If they would have stood firm, it would have been a non-story. But because they've waffled and shown weakness, well, they're just going to be cannibalized. And as far as I go, I have always considered myself to be a very mainstream political commentator.
Mm-hmm.
I've appeared on CNN. We've interviewed everyone from Pat Buchanan to Ted Nugent. Yes, we take some very direct stands on issues that other people seem to be taboo, as I said before, but I've been awarded a certificate of recognition from the Memphis City Council for outstanding contributions to the community as a result of my work on this show. I've never seen myself other than a very mainstream radio host, and as a result, you know, I'm on numerous stations, and I'm not talking about just internet stations, but AM, FM radio stations.
Yeah.
So for them to disparage me like that, it can happen to anyone, and it will happen to anyone unless we stop it. We've got to demand better from the people who claim to be representing us.
Yeah, and I think also just to finish up on this point, I think there are a lot of, you know, let's say kind of, you know, normal Americans, I certainly don't mean that as an insult, average Americans who are kind of instinctively conservative. And I think they, you know, they don't look too much into what Glenn Beck is actually saying or what J.D. Hayworth is actually saying. And they just kind of assume that these guys are on the right. They kind of, they're like me. They support me and my family and my friends and my people and my civilization heritage. And I think at some point they're going to realize that, no, they don't. You know, Glenn Beck is, you know, he'll say some things that I like. Glenn Beck and all these people are just as kind of antithetical to having a West that's conscious of itself, that's proud of itself, that's dynamic, that's productive moving forward, as, you know, Abe Foxman is. And they're gonna, you know, start to understand that people like James Edwards are actually sticking up for them. Go ahead.
I'm sorry to interrupt, Richard. I was just gonna say, obviously people like you and I are standing up for them far better than folks like Glenn Beck. And you mentioned his name, and I just can't let it pass because he wrote such an excellent article about his commentary on the Black Founding Fathers of America. I mean, these clowns have the nerve to go on TV and say stuff like that with a straight face. Now, granted, people like Hannity and Beck do sprinkle a little bit more truth into their analysis than you're going to find from, you know, left-wing talking heads. But in doing so, they attract our people and basically lead them around the rolling rat wheel. They spin their wheels making a lot of noise, and they never get anywhere. And that's where folks, I think, Richard, like you and I come in, because every group, and this has been said a million times, every group, every minority group, has its own individuals and organizations, its spokespeople, who seek to advance their self-interest. The only group really in the world that does is our conservative whites. And so I think that board seek to serve as a leader, and I think that our people are clamoring for leadership, and they're not getting it from some of the names you just mentioned.
Absolutely. I think it's about to break. Well, before we talk about your book, let me get your take real quickly on the Mel Gibson scandal, because you actually had a very good article on this that appeared at your website and at the Occidental Observer. So just give us and you also have a kind of connection with the Gibson family and things like that. Just tell us a little bit about this bizarre double standard going on. Which you and, you know, a number of other people and myself included have pointed out, of someone like Roman Polanski, who is a talented director, to be sure. I don't want to denounce him in that way, but how he can basically be a pedophile and yet have his career be uninterrupted for 3 decades. And then in a rage, in an embarrassing and in some ways shameful rage, but, you know, Mel Gibson can basically use the N-word and his career is finished.
Well, I mean, you know, I saw that, and every now and then my jaw still drops when I ask a rhetorical question, can they be serious? And so I had to write something. I wrote something of an opus on that because I was so motivated by the chain of events there. And so basically the synopsis of my piece was that, well, you got Mel Gibson, and no one can defend the things that he said in those secretly taped private conversations with his girlfriend. Now, we don't know if those tapes were edited or what the context of some of those comments were, but, you know, no one's for talking to women like that, irregardless of the situation. So we don't defend Mel Gibson for calling the woman all sorts of names, but the repercussions that he's had to endure as a result of that just aren't consistent. So basically, he dropped the dreaded N-word. Mm-hmm. It's okay for other people to say it, but not the conservative Christians like Mel Gibson. He dropped the N-word in a rant to his girlfriend because she's dressed provocatively, apparently afraid that she might get raped, those are his words. And so as a result of that, his talent agency, his management company, which is headed by Ari Emanuel, the brother of Rahm Emanuel. You can probably surmise where his interest lie. Well, he was subsequently dropped, and dropped pretty quickly. Just for saying the N-word, at least that was what their official line was when they dropped him as a client. Well, I compared and contrasted that to the numerous clients they represent, from gangster rappers black actors to the very white Charlie Sheen, who have all very publicly, many times, not just in song, but also in rage, used the N-word. And not only have they not been fired, but in the very same time span that this organization headed by Ari Emanuel dropped Mel Gibson, they negotiated a $2 million per episode contract extension for Charlie Sheen on Two and a Half Men. Now, Charlie Sheen did the exact same thing as Mel Gibson, so what's the difference?
All right, we're going to hold up right there. What's the difference? We're going to find out when we return. If you've liked the first half of Richard Spencer's interview with me, you're going to like the second half even more. We're just getting started. Stay tuned. The Political Cesspool rolls forward this Saturday night, August 21st, right after this.
Don't go away. The Political Cesspool guys will be back right after these messages. To get on the show and express your opinion in the Political Cesspool, call us toll-free at 1-866-986-6397.
I tell you, you know, in all sincerity, I needed this break tonight. This is a luxury for me to be able to give you what you expect, which is an hour of great and informative and entertaining radio. I'm able to give that to you without actually having to do any work tonight. And it has been, I tell you, an exhausting summer for all of us here in the Political Cesspool. With all that's been going on, it's been well documented both by us and, well, by everybody else. So this is enjoyable for me. I hope you're enjoying it as much as I'm enjoying catching up on a few emails while we're live on the air. But let's get right back to it and see if we can do even better.
Well, my conclusion, which I think was drawn fairly obviously, was because Mel Gibson made The Passion of the Christ.
Yeah.
And I don't think that the folks who are in charge of the 8 major Hollywood studios were particularly excited about that. And he has now been put himself into a position where he's going to be made to pay the price. And paying the price is exactly what he's doing. And I think that's the only difference between Mel Gibson and everyone else who has done the exact same things that he's done. But not only been fired, but seen their careers advanced by the very same agency. Mel Gibson made Passion of the Christ. Mel Gibson made comments there when he was arrested in 2006 that were, to me, you know, fairly sensible, although I wish he would have done it in a more professional way.
Yes.
But that's why, in a nutshell, Mel Gibson was dropped. And that article, as you mentioned, was widely distributed, and I'm most thankful for that.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, for Hollywood to be denouncing people on moral grounds or on grounds of taste or on any grounds at all is just totally absurd. I mean,
but Hollywood, more than anybody, have you seen the kind of filth and trash and utter garbage that they produce? And I'm not, you know, I'm talking about every single movie, almost without exception. And you brought up Roman Polanski. Well, yeah, here's this Jewish individual who sodomized and raped a 13-year-old girl. And not only has he not been announced, some of the biggest actors in Hollywood have given him awards in absentia, have clamored that he not face any sort of repercussions for this. I mean, how perverted must they be?
Well, they're quite perverted. And, you know, obviously you can see that in these films that they produce. I mean, I can probably tolerate about 3 to 5 Hollywood movies per year that I find kind of like mildly interesting and don't just make my stomach turn. But it's just unbelievable. And I don't want to get too, I'm going to sound like Spengler or something, but it makes me sick that our culture produces this just total junk. I mean, think of just people hundreds of years from now looking back at us, and they look at this industry that, you know, billions of dollars were dedicated to creating this stuff. They must just have total contempt for us, as they should.
I tell you, Western civilization is on the precipice, Richard, and what's so startling is the fact not that we now find ourselves in our present position, but the fact that we got here so quickly. I think American culture, by and large, even up until the mid-1950s, when it all started to fall apart with the Brown versus Board of Education decision, American culture has a unique Eurocentric representation of Western civilization was still pretty much in effect. And then, you still had Walt Disney making very good, wholesome movies in the 1950s. You know, that was within, certainly my father was alive at that time. And so that's within the last generation. And to see how far we've fallen in just the last 60 years, I tell you, it's enough to make you, take action, and that's what I'm trying to do here. Yeah. That's what you're doing.
Oh, yeah. I mean, look at the, we don't have to dwell on this too long, but just look at some of the great films that we've inherited from the 40s and 50s. Look at the intellectual climate that was going on even the 1920s, which was kind of a decadent era in itself. But where you had, H.O. Mencken as a major public intellectual, I mean, this brilliant writer and thinker. Now we have, this collection of people, which is, Thomas Friedman is our the jewel of American thought. I mean, what kind of preposterous, sick joke is this?
You bring up excellent point. Henry Ford, could you imagine a genius, an industrialist like Henry Ford? He wouldn't be allowed inside one of his showrooms today.
No.
This long march through the institutions, they have captured all of our institutions, not just American businesses, but certainly academia and Hollywood, even the church, if your faith leads you that way. Christ would be kicked out of the church today. It's so rampant with political correctness today. America is in a very sad shape of affairs, and it is across the board. Something needs to be done quickly. I can't understand why more European Americans are still so enamored in this culture of bread and circus that they can't get off their backsides to join the fray. To see hundreds of thousands, millions of people, literally millions of people packing college football stadiums and professional football stadiums every weekend in the fall, and yet, how many people come to an American Renaissance conference? How many people donate to Alternative Right and the political festival and be there? I tell you, that's enough to make you a little upset.
Yeah, it is. It is bread and circuses. I mean, that is the best way to describe it. It's a kind of also just that culture of the spectator. You just kind of watch this stuff. You passively consume all this junk that they just keep shoveling down your throat. In the culture industry. I mean, it is a really profound problem. And maybe we should leave this topic before we, get out the cyanide capsules.
I'm putting the trouble, Richard. I'll tell you this. I probably would. I can't lie to you. I probably would be doing this even if I knew that ultimately our efforts were going to be ineffective. I would do it because I think we honor our ancestors in doing it.
Yes.
I think that if you look at the sacrifices of blood and bone that they contributed to our culture, we owe them at least our very best efforts, which oftentimes are filthy rags in comparison. I probably would be doing my very best, even if I knew it was going to fail. But I'm not convinced that that it's over. It certainly doesn't look good now. But what one man can do, another can do.
Mm-hmm.
And if you subscribe to that, then there is hope there. But unfortunately, our people don't coalesce as an ethnocentric political force, and that's something that's a puzzle we're going to have to unlock. We're going to have to unlock it pretty quickly.
Yeah, I'll say two things. I mean, this is a great discussion. The first is, when you actually consider the billions of dollars that are basically dedicated to creating culture that is completely destructive of families, of healthy relations between the sexes, all these kind of things. And the fact that we actually still have, a lot of people in this country, millions who are decent, I think that is a miracle. In some ways, it's actually kind of heartwarming that they can actually watch, Inglourious Basterds. Millions of people can watch that, and yet they aren't turned into repulsive cretin insects. It shows that there is a power for what we're talking about. We're for things that are in many ways natural. And that, all those billions can't actually totally break down, some basic values, like people still value heroes. They don't value, sick individuals who want to subvert everything. People still have a sense of high and low. People think, all this modern art, Schoenberg actually thought literally that people would be whistling and humming his just incomprehensible 12-tone nonsense, and that this would be the music of the future. No, it's wrong. People don't like that stuff. Modern art, people still have a concept of beauty. People kind of laugh at all the stuff, all these, MFA degreed, you know, pseudo-intellectuals, you know, avant-garde people create, you know, tenured people at universities who think of themselves as on the avant-garde, and stuff like that. I mean, I think it's amazing that our culture has actually survived, and it makes me believe that all this stuff, like, you can spend another $100 billion on the culture industry, and it actually won't have an effect. Like, it, you know, it can't work. And the other thing I'll just add really quick is that, I think things really change in a flash, you know, in The Sun Also Rises, one of my favorite quotes comes from, I'm forgetting the person who said it at the moment, but he's actually a kind of, he was a drunkard and a kind of depressed soul. And they ask him, you know, how did you go bankrupt? And he said, gradually and then all at once. And, I think we're in the, and that's very true. If anyone who's ever had money problems, they understand that. But also I think it's true with our struggle. You know, what we're doing now, it feels extremely gradual. You know, more and more people might listen to cesspool or, you know, we might create a new website like Alternative Right, or we might, you know, whatever.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to cut it right there. You will be able to hear the thrilling conclusion to the interview that I did with Richard Spencer in Alternative Right Radio. By the way, check him out, alternativeright.com. You're going to be able to catch the end of it right after these words on the Political Cesspool radio program.
Don't go away. The Political Cesspool guys will be back right after these messages.
We'll return.
Jump in the Political Cesspool with James and the gang. Call us tonight at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the Political Cesspool, James Edwards.
All right, everybody. Final segment of yet another great installment of the Political Cesspool radio program. It goes by too quickly. It surely does. I hope you've enjoyed this off-the-beaten-path third hour as we have been listening to an interview that I conducted as a guest of Richard Spencer and Alternative Right Radio. Richard Spencer, one of the few people out there doing a great job standing strong for our people and for our cause at Alternative Right. He is certainly deserving of your support as well. And let's go back now to the interview, to the tape, and its conclusion right now here on the Political Cesspool.
So that's what keeps me going and not, you know, succumbing to despair.
Richard, I've got a comment on that, and I know we're kind of getting long-winded here. Not long-winded because I've enjoyed this conversation as much as any I've ever had in terms of an interview. But you, it's as though you've been reading my heart in those two comments that you just mentioned, because I have always felt the exact same way. Mm-hmm. I think fundamentally there are still, and it goes without saying, millions of white people out there in America, not just in America, but around the world, who fundamentally agree with us. They have an implicit whiteness that we have got to take to the explicit level. But I think on some of our core values, they are right there with us. And, you know, this is something that it has been gradual, what's been taken from us. But another thing you have to understand is that people, not many people have the ability to lead. Mm-hmm. And therefore, not a lot of people are going to be willing to stick their necks out. But that doesn't necessarily make them bad people. Maybe we would expect and hope a little more from them, but people do have an innate tendency to follow what is ever in vogue at the moment, what is ever edgy at the moment. And I think, and we've talked about this on my show in interviews that you've done with me, that if we can find a way to make our ideas fashionable again.
Cool.
That it will almost be like turn on the light switch. And what you're doing with Alternative Right, your website looks so good. I don't know how anybody could go there to it and not feel compelled to join. But yeah, you know, hopefully more people will begin to listen to people like us and not people like Eli Roth. You mentioned the Glorious Bastards. That was another thing that happened this summer. We got denounced by the Bear Jew himself, Eli Roth. He plays the character Bear Jew in Glorious Bastards, and he's one of the people who joined the chorus line of denouncing the Political Cesspool this summer. But yeah, I think instinctively that people, there's still a great, not all of them. I mean, you know, some people have been subverted,
Yes.
But there's still millions of people out there from which we can recruit, and so we should.
Yes. Well, let's before we bring this to a close, I don't want it to end, but tell us a little bit about your book. I'll direct people to, you know, they can find out more certainly at your website. And I wrote a piece on your book, which you know, I had read before it was published, and I really enjoyed it. But just, you know, give us a little taste of your thesis in terms of how people have really jumped on this racism thing. You know, if you opposed healthcare, you're racist, or you know, this whole thing, this whole NAACP controversy, or you know, they were which started with them basically attempting to get the Tea Party leadership to denounce its followers and you know, start do a racist witch hunt within the Tea Party, which would certainly monopolize most of their time, which is probably the the goal of the NAACP. But
well, it is.
Yeah.
No, I'll tell you, you know, that's exactly what it is. And before I make my point, I'll say that this book was intended to draw from the very people we were just mentioning.
Mm-hmm.
It's written in such a way that I think it can effectively serve as a bridge between, for lack of a better word, the nominal conservatives out there. It can serve as a bridge that will attract them over to the movement that they should be a part of, which is our movement.
Mm-hmm.
And it's written in such a way that it's not too hot to where it'll turn them off. But if a regular reader of your website were to pick up my book, they would certainly find many things in which they can relate to as well. I think it was written in such a way that it strikes a balance between both sides. And
yep.
The reason I wrote it, it's pretty simple. As I said before, I have had it with watching the so-called conservative movement in this country, or you know, spin its wheels, making a lot of noise, and never going anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these Tea Party rallies, for our prime example, you know, they came out like gangbusters. It was a wonderful, and still is to an extent, a mm-hmm. remarkable grassroots phenomenon that has drawn millions of people into its ranks. They say things that we can all agree with. They want to roll back the government. They want to limit spending, lower taxes, so on and so forth.
Yeah.
But all they do now is spend their time insisting that they aren't racist. Well, if you read the book, as we say on our website, you'll understand why this occurs and exactly how to solve the problem, because it's no accident, Richard, why the NAACP, and hell for that, the entire conservative and liberal establishment,
yeah.
Throw around this word like confetti. They throw around the word racist like confetti because they know it's going to have an effect that will cause paleoconservatives or alternative right conservatives dead in their tracks.
Mm-hmm.
It has an effect where it has this ability, this bizarre ability to suck people over into the sidelines where they spend all their time debating with folks who are never going to join our movement anyway as to whether or not they're racist. And it's completely counterproductive. But that, again, is why they throw the word around like confetti. That's the point of this whole racism business. You know, we all know.
Mm-hmm.
It's a Marxist construct coined by Trotsky himself to serve just this purpose. And it works every time because conservatives just don't get it. We haven't grasped what's really behind all these constant charges. And once you understand what it means, you can start building a conservative movement that wins. I think perhaps the classic definition of racist did at one time mean someone who had hatred or ill will towards people of other ethnic groups. But
right.
Now, the modern-day definition of racist is simply a white person. And once you understand that, you can unlock this socio-political nuclear bomb once and for all, and that's what conservatives need to do. I tell you this, and I say this with no reservations whatsoever. Everybody in the Tea Party needs to have a copy of my book because they are really on the verge of sinking a wonderful opportunity in the same way that the Minutemen Project was sunk. And
yes.
I don't want to see that happen.
I absolutely agree with you. I think I mentioned this in my piece on you, but I would suggest to our readers to go out and buy, you know, five copies or a dozen or, you know, whatever you can afford and give them to, you know, to your uncle who's a Fox News watcher, you know, who kind of has the right instincts, but is always drawn into, you know, supporting the GOP and doing whatever Hannity tells him to do. You know, get, you know, and, you know, I don't want to sound like I'm insulting these people or something like that, but, you know, give them this book. I think, because it, again, as James says, it's not gonna, you know, it, they're not gonna read it and think that this is just, this is, you know, too hot or too edgy or thing like that. It's just right, but I think it will really change their mind because, you know, as you know, the this Mark Williams fellow, I don't know too much about him. I don't know if I agree with him or not on all these issues, but, you know, I generally agree with him on limiting government and all that kind of good stuff. You know, he was basically denounced by the Tea Party for doing a blog that was an explicit satire. You know, because they found this might be offensive, and in a sense, just the NAACP told them to get rid of them, and they did. And you know, they're just going to go down like all of these, you know, conservative movements that are these kind of rear guard actions that self destruct after a couple of years.
And these people, we have been imprisoned by a word.
Yeah.
Our people imprisoned by a word. And, you know, this Mark Williams fellow, another prime example, you know, of what we've seen with J.D. Hayworth and then Paul LeBue this week with regards to my radio program and its appearance on my show. Absolute capitulation.
Yeah.
It's madness, Richard. Why do we have black spokesmen for a Tea Party movement that is 95% white? Why does the Republican Party have a black man as its national chairman? Who are they pandering to? They're pandering to people that will never join them. Anyone's free to join the Tea Party. Anyone's free to vote Republican. But we know by voting statistics that blacks don't care about lower taxes. They don't care about conservative values. They will never be part of it. And yet we feel the need to alienate our own base in order to attempt to curry favor with them, when it will never happen. And this falls into exactly what the media is hoping that our people will do. This is the response that they are clamoring us to give, because they know it is going to render our movement, the Tea Party movement, the Republican Party, whatever, obsolete. And again, my book, I think, is the kryptonite to this spell. And, it's been well reviewed. It's, well, it's a hell of a book, I think, if I can say so, Richard. Yes. I'm proud of it. Not that I'm biased or anything.
No, everyone should go out and get a copy. It's a quick read as well. It's well worth it.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, that was, for all intents and purposes, my interview with Richard Spencer on Alternative Right Radio. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I enjoyed presenting it to you. If you want to listen to it in its entirety, go to alternativeright.com and go to the radio section. I'm James Edwards on behalf of my entire crew. We will see you next week. We love you, ladies and gentlemen. God bless you. Remember to live life the way we do, without retreat, surrender, or apology. Good night, everybody.
Or to make a donation to keep this program on the air, go to www.thepoliticalcesspool.org.